Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to today's segment of Afternoon Satsang on Radio Sai's Thursday Live, where, as usual, from the center of our spiritual universe, Prashanthi Nilayam, we are broadcasting this satsang. And this week, we will be resuming the conversations with Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba as documented by Dr. John Hislop. We have had quite a big break from this, in fact. On the 23rd of April, we took up something related to the Aradhana Day, and after that, we started our new series on the Sanatana Sarathi. Now, we come back to the conversations, and to give you a brief connect to what we were discussing the last few weeks in the conversations with Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, it was almost entirely on Jyoti meditation, the do's and the don'ts, the spirit behind the Jyoti meditation. In fact, Swami says that the same light which is in you is in all others, and once you are able to practice this meditation consistently and deeply, you will attain life's ultimate goal of liberation and moksha. And Swami also says that there are many other kinds of meditations which are also effective, but the easiest is this. Having said that, he advises Dr. John Hislop, who at that point in time was an administrator in the Sri Satya Sai organizations. He tells him that though this is the case, you need not force everybody to adopt only this. Let everybody adopt whatever meditation style they like, but this is the easiest. This is the easiest, and even if they adopt other meditation styles, ultimately they will all start seeing the wisdom and the beauty of this. So those who accept it on faith and adopt the Jyoti meditation, great. Those who don't force them, because in the natural course they will discover, and after a while they will realize how great this light meditation is and change to this. Do not force them, give them some time. So that was where we were when we spoke last on this theme, and that is where we will continue from, because the discussion continues along meditation and enters some beautiful facets as always. We will discuss all of that in today's satsang, but before doing that, let us offer our most humble pranams at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan, and let's welcome Brother Prem. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind, and Sairam to all our listeners. As you said, we're going to have a little bit of continuation of what Hislop was asking about, especially about meditation. But one of the themes with which the conversation kind of ended is, finally it all comes down to, you know, how much faith you have in what Swami says. Hmm. And even we had discussed about that. You know, when Swami says that this is a good practice to follow, it finally comes down to, do you accept that completely, or do you again listen to others' words or other techniques or other you know, fascinating practices which come by, you kind of get carried away by that. And Swami was kind of hinting at that. He was saying that, you know, there are other thoughts that come, distractions come by, and that's why people are not able to hold on to this, and that's all right, they eventually will find out. And I think that is the basis of the idea of you know, sticking to any form of meditation for that matter, and that is going to be spoken of a little ahead. We'll come to that, that as you said, it's going to lead to some fascinating insights that Swami is going to give, which also is pretty much useful for us at this present time that we're all going through. But we'll come to that as at the appropriate time. We'll probably start with the question that Hislop is asking after this discussion. So Hislop asks the question. He says, Swami says that it is a benefit of the highest order if an individual's life is such that he merits God's love. How to directly experience that divine love? So that is the question that Hislop asks.
And Swami responds, in a kitchen is a sweet. Now you must come from afar to the kitchen to enjoy the sweet. Only when you eat the food is the hunger relieved. To enjoy the sweetness of divine love, you must attempt to experience it directly. How to get the ability to experience the divine love directly? Our ancient rishis enjoyed bliss by going to solitude and sitting with their body stiff and apparently lifeless. On the other hand, people are all the time shaking their heads and bodies. Such people cannot get concentration. The body is described as a temple containing the Lord. If this part of our body keeps on shaking, the contents, which is the mind, will also be shaking. That is why in meditation certain postures are described and they must be maintained. So Swami starts off by saying that God's love has to be experienced. It cannot be taught. It cannot be, you know, it is not a theoretical thing. It is something that is very practical. And only when you enjoy it directly will everything else hold any meaning or benefit. And after that, Swami goes on in detail to say how you must take the baby steps towards that. And it's very clear that one of them is keeping a steady body, because we often hear that a sound mind in a sound body, which also means a steady mind in a steady body. So Swami says that is the reason you have to adopt a certain posture and sit straight without shaking, moving. And later on, Swami also gives examples of, you know, if you scratch your head, if you're distracted by a thought over here, it is not. A shaking, quivering and distracted body is a sure indication of a distracted, shaking and shivering mind. In fact, Swami directly puts it, he's saying that if the body keeps shaking, its content, which is the mind, also will keep shaking.
There's another analogy that Swami gives, and I think we had mentioned this earlier also when Swami was speaking about meditation, where this was shared by Sai Surinath, sir. He was saying that Swami had called them for an interview when they were students. And there was this one particular boy who was especially more agitated or, you know, restless than the others. You know, some of us are like that. By nature, we are very fidgety and, you know, can't sit in one place. So this boy was like that, you know. He was like jerking movements all the time and, you know, couldn't sit quietly for some time. And Swami was noticing him, that he was, you know, you stand out in a crowd when you're, you know, very fidgety and restless like that. So Swami told him a few times, you know, sit still, don't move around too much. And he would be quiet for a few seconds, and then again he would start moving around. So everybody was, you know, laughing at this whole thing, and Swami was talking to them, and at the end of it, Swami said, if you have any questions, you can ask. And of all the people there, this boy, who was the most fidgety of them, he said, Swami, how to have a stable mind? You know, how to still the mind, how to control the mind, something like that, you know, typical questions that students generally ask. And it was almost like Swami was waiting for this. And then Swami said, see, if you have a pot of water and you place it on a table, Swami said, if you want the water in the pot to be stable, if you keep shaking the table, will it be possible to keep the water stable? So Swami said, see, the pot is like, you know, the body, the pot and the table, it's like the body. If you keep shaking the body, the mind also will not be stable. It's a very sweet analogy. So Swami said, you start by maintaining the stability of the body, and then you talk about the stability of the mind. In fact, Swami speaks of this in some of his Samukos discourses and all that. Swami says that that is why you're always spoken, I mean, when you're taught sadhana, you said that first you still the body. You sit quietly, you close your eyes. These are all ways by which you are not shaking the pot itself. And then you speak about how can you maintain the water stable. That is, you don't let desires come in. You don't let other emotions come in. That is secondary. So the first you start by stilling the body. But what's more fascinating is the question which Hislop is asking and the answer that Swami is giving. This also comes from, I think, one of the basic, I don't know whether I could call it conflict or paradox that we face. Because Hislop asks, how do you merit God's love? So how do I, what should I do so that I can earn Swami's love? But what answer Swami is giving is, Swami is saying that you still the mind, or Swami is giving the example of the sweet is there in the kitchen, you have to come and take it. I think the suggestion that Swami is making is, God's love is always there. It is not about you earning God's love, or you obtaining God's love, or you becoming deserving and then God's love comes on you. God's love is always there, but what you do in the process of sadhana is you are able to see what is already there. And I think that is a very important point, because this is a point of contention always. I know recently, I think when we were in the workshop for the youth, the leadership workshop, I think we had that I was saying that, you know, we should earn Swami's love and we should earn the title of Swami students from Swami. And I think there was another participant in the panel who said that Swami's love is given. Swami always loves us. And both are true. You know, Swami's love is always there. It's never, you know, when you say that Swami tells us to love all, how can we say that Swami doesn't love all? So certainly Swami loves us despite our flaws and everything. But at the same time, we working towards Swami's love is also real. Because that is what, as Swami is saying here, gives us the opportunity to see the love which is always present. And that can be done when the body is still, the mind is still, and the mind is able to focus on what is truth. And then you see that everything is a blessing of Swami and everything is an expression of Swami's love.
You know, the mind is often compared to a horse. And it's very interesting. If you see a horse never sits down. That was a revelation for me. Because the only time a horse sits down is when it's about to die or it's when it's very sick. A healthy horse never sits. And it's so beautiful that the wise ancients decided to compare the mind to a horse. Now, apart from the fact that a horse never sits, even if you see a standing horse, you will see how fickle or it is never steady even for a single moment.
Right.
It will either be moving its tail or it will be moving its leg. It simply lifts its leg and put it back down. Even if it doesn't move anything, it moves the muscles of the leg. It's constantly moving, constantly fidgeting. And that's why all of this, you know, because Swami has told it over so clearly here. Like, see, when Swami is asked a question as to how to meditate, Swami says, start loving God. When you ask Swami how to love God, Swami says, start focusing, concentrating. It only means that these two are reinforcing each other. Love for God reinforces your concentration. Concentration reinforces your love for God. You have to work on both of them. Here, very clearly, Swami is saying you have to concentrate. To concentrate means the mind should be fixed on one. That means the mind should not go on to many others. The mind should not shake. Controlling the wavering nature of the mind is another ball game altogether. Before that, control the, as you said, the pot in which the mind is. So it starts off by keeping the body steady and the mind steady. And once this focus or concentration is achieved, Swami has said it in the previous parts where concentration is the first step, contemplation comes next, then meditation. Once this concentration is achieved, not just in the spiritual sphere, in all spheres, you are able to progress and achieve success. In fact, I am reminded of an incident that happens in the life of Swami Vivekananda at Chicago. It is said that when he had gone there for the Parliament of Religions, those days there was no air travel, it was by steamship. So you don't go there for just 5 days or 10 days or a week. When you go there, you go for a couple of months possibly.
Right.
Because it takes 1 month for you to travel up and 1 month to travel down. So once when he was walking along, he sees some boys who have put eggshells in water. And possibly, I don't know if it's a river or a lake, and they're trying to shoot it. And many attempts, they're not even able to shoot even one eggshell. And with an amused look, Swami Vivekananda is standing. He's enjoying seeing how these children are enjoying and entertaining themselves. So they just see him and say, would you like to try? He says, okay, I'll try. He picks up the gun, he holds it, and then it is said that 12 shots he fires, and in 12 shots he shoots 12 shells. Then those boys are confounded. They're stunned. They ask him, are you a shooter? Have you practiced using the gun? He says, no, this is the first time I'm holding a gun in my hand. Then they say, then how is it possible that you're able to do this? He says, no, this is the first time I'm holding a gun in my hand. But I have already learned how to focus and concentrate. I just focused and concentrated on the eggshells, and once I concentrate, I'm able to do this. So this itself shows that once we achieve focus and concentration, everything else is attainable. In fact, that is the purpose of education as well. We think that I want to study science, I want to pursue commerce, I want to pursue arts or whatever. Now it has opened up even more. But if we look at it, this whole education system is so designed to teach us how to focus and concentrate. In order to focus and concentrate, I may choose to use science. You know, I learn science so that I learn the art of focusing and learning. I know how to focus, I know how to learn. as a example, I use, or as a sample, I use science. Somebody uses commerce. Somebody uses arts. Whatever. In fact, that is the reason Swami also would say, study to be steady. The purpose of studying is so that you become steady. The whole Brahmacharya phase of our life. You know, Brahmacharya is supposed to be the time when you are taught the greatest goal in your life, which is Brahman. At that time, you are equipped with the ability to learn and the ability to focus. So, it's almost like when the Brahmacharya is supposed to be the foundation stage of life, you are taught concentration. And I think that's because concentration and focusing is the foundation for everything. For life skills, for spirituality, for career, for anything, for a relationship. Everywhere, focusing and the ability to learn through this focusing is the first step.
Exactly. And that's what Swami would say, you know, whenever you would speak about meditation. Swami would say that it's, I think even in the later part, Swami is going to talk about the three different stages of meditation. And Swami would say that, you know, you should not use meditation merely for concentration. And at that time, Swami would say that, you know, all of these activities that you do, whether you're studying, whether you're doing a business, whether you're doing a transaction, or you're talking to somebody, all of that requires concentration. So if you use meditation also only to, you know, enhance your concentration, yes, it will help in the other activities that you do, like that beautiful example of Swami Vivekananda shooting those eggshell says. Swami would say that's why it's meaningless to use meditation only to enhance what you're doing in the worldly life itself. And you should use meditation to go to the higher states that meditation alone can get you. Because this kind of concentration that you get by doing worldly activities, it is for a certain purpose. You know, you're getting some work done, you're getting some task completed by doing that, whether you're studying, whether you're, you know, working on some scientific discovery or whatever it is. So don't use meditation for that purpose. And I think that Swami will speak of later. But I think that was a very fascinating thing that, you know, Swami is converting, as you rightly said, the way meditation and love for God is juxtaposed. When Swami is asked about loving God, Swami is speaking about focusing the mind. When Hislop asked so much about meditation, Swami was pulling him back to the idea of, you know, loving how you God. Should love God, right? And I think the answer that Swami is giving is not complete. Swami goes on in his answer. Swami says, when in meditation, take the mind deep so as not to be distracted. The deeper the mind is taken, the less it is disturbed by the surrounding noise. In the Gita, it is said that concentration precedes wisdom. If in sitting for meditation, you keep on scratching your head or your back, you will not be doing the right kind of meditation. Some people sit for meditation. They simply sit, but then they are wondering how soon they can move from that posture. So Swami is again speaking about attaining that stillness of body first, even before talking of the higher stages of meditation. Can you be still? And really, if you see that, some people attain this even when they are completely absorbed in their activity or work. And to a certain extent, I'm sure we all would have had an experience of this. When you have a tough exam the next day and you're working really hard, you know that there's a kind of focus that you've had that you've not had throughout the semester, right? And I'm sure in some way, we all would have had that. Swami would even speak about mothers having that kind of a focus when they're doing something related to taking care of their children. Or I have seen some of my teachers have that kind of a focus. I used to have a math teacher who was so very fond of calculus. And he somehow did not manage to pass on that fondness to us. But when he would teach calculus, you know, you could see that he really would be in some kind of a
different zone.
He would smile to himself. He would say, how beautiful this is. And we really could not see what he was seeing. But, you know, there is a kind of a state of absolute focus and absorption that you attain when what you're doing is very, very fascinating to you. So Swami would say that the similar thing should happen in meditation when you're focusing your mind on something that you are so absorbed in, so, you know, interested in. You know, that's why you meditate on a form that you love. So much so that you're lost to the surroundings.
you know, the key word, I think, when you said absorbed, that is what it is. Because when Swami says, take the mind deep, I think taking the mind deep means being involved in it, being totally involved in it. It is so beautiful. I remember a teacher while speaking said that according to what Swami wants us to work, Swami wants us to get involved but not attached. I found that statement very, very beautiful because we often confuse the two. Involvement is how keenly we put in efforts, and attachment is how we are looking forward towards the result. And that is what Krishna tells in the Bhagavad Gita, that focus on the efforts, not on the results. And that is the secret, I think. Involvement without attachment. And go deep means to get involved in it completely. And as you rightly said, in our worldly life, we see so many examples. Day-to-day life, we see examples when we are involved. We seem totally lost to the world. I mean, when I'm involved watching something on a television, I don't hear my mother calling me. I don't hear my father calling me. How is it possible? At the same time, when I'm sitting for meditation, a dog barking a mile away disturbs me. How is it? You know, it's a very, very practical question, and this is an experience all of us had. It just shows that we are involved when we are watching television and not involved when we are meditating. So all this is about getting involved, because, and it is, as you again rightly said, in getting involved is where that love and liking becomes so important. Even while watching television, I'm not involved in everything. It's possibly in a show or in a movie or something that I like a lot. In the same way, when I'm meditating, that's why Swami says, choose a name and form of your liking and grow in that love, grow in that liking, because... And that is also the reason, I think, why when you are asking about focusing and concentration, Swami is speaking about love, because that love helps to enhance. And when you are speaking about loving, Swami is saying, no, start focusing, because each one is proof of the other. Like when you have love, you automatically focus. If you are focusing, definitely it means you have love. Both are building onto each other, and that is what Swami says, that you have to take the mind deeper and deeper so that you don't get distracted at all. We confuse it in the other way. I think that if I want to meditate, I have to make everything silent. To this day also, whenever I try meditation, I do that. I go to the room, I shut the doors, I shut the windows, and light one lamp, put off all the other lights, because I don't want to be distracted. That is not the, that is possibly a good starting point, but that is not the objective of meditation. The objective of meditation is I am able to do all this. Shut off the sound, shut off the light, shut off everything without actually physically shutting them off. I must be seated in the middle of a journey in a train or a bus, and I must be able to shut off all the lights and all the sounds. And that is possible through involvement and going deep. And that is why Swami says in meditation you have to go deep. Because when you go deep, you become more and more independent. I don't need to switch off that switch actually. I don't need to tell everyone to be quiet. I don't need to sit in the soundproof room. I can experience that same silence and absolute calm in the middle of chaos if I'm able to get completely involved and go deep.
Right. So I think from what Swami is saying, that is kind of the goal that you work towards, as you rightly said, to be able to sit anywhere and then have that focus. In fact, Swami would give the example, a very beautiful example of a, you know, mother nursing a child. Swami would say that, you know, traditionally in the families, we used to have this cradle made out of the sari hung in the middle of the room. Swami would give that example. The mother will put the child in that cradle and she would go about doing all the other works. But Swami would say, but one part of the mind is always on the child, because she knows that, you know, that's the first responsibility for the mother at that point. So constantly, even though the mother is involved in all the other activities, and all the other activities of the in a house also require a lot of attention in that sense, but the mind will always be focused on that call of that child. Swami would say that is the eventual state that you achieve, where even through the day you might be doing all the other activities, but your mind is still in meditation, where your mind is always focused on the Lord. So that's probably the eventual thing that you reach. But to start off with, Swami says that, you know, you kind of find a place where you're able to sit still, So if you're going to start meditation, probably that's not the best place to start, sitting in a train where you're automatically, you know, in a movement. That's why Swami would say, you know, find an early morning time where you're able to sit down, you're not disturbed by others and all of that. But even as you're doing this, that's the goal that you have in mind, that you don't have the outside disturbing your meditation. So Swami continues in that answer. Swami says, when in meditation, concentrate on the form chosen by you, then pass into contemplation and then into meditation. Only by the three stages will you get there. From concentration, one must cross the field of contemplation to enter meditation. There are three things: the meditator, the chosen form, and the process of meditation. The three should merge and become one. And this is the state of meditation. But if all the time you feel you are meditating, this cannot be called meditation. When there is complete attention on the form chosen, that will lead to meditation. The attention of the mind is totally removed from the body and totally concentrated on the form chosen as the object of your meditation.
You know, when I read this, I was reminded of a question that would often pop in my mind. When I look at my whole day generally, before this corona lockdown and all that, one of the happiest moments of the day for me is when I'm playing badminton. And I say this because after playing that, I feel so liberated, so light, no thoughts in my head. And when I began to think of it, I thought, this is because when I'm playing badminton, I'm focusing so much on badminton, possibly the nuances, what move to do, what to play, that for that half an hour or 1 hour, I'm forgetting all the other things. I forget all my relationships. I mean, my whole world is only the badminton now. And that is when I felt that this is possibly the joy you get in concentration. You know, people, I can only imagine what may be the joy that they get in meditation, which is the advanced state. But concentration itself is able to give so much joy. And then when you read what Swami is saying here about the concentrate on the form chosen by you, I realize that one reason possibly why that joy that you get by playing badminton cannot sustain for a long time is because the object of concentration is also very, very important. What I'm focusing on, because until I reach the state of Advaita or non-duality, there is duality and I am influenced. I am influenced by the qualities of the object on which I meditate. And that is why it is absolutely essential that the object of my meditation be something of sterling virtues and supreme qualities. Because only to that extent it can give me joy. In fact, I was reading a discourse that Bhagwan delivered in 1978 summer course. Mm-hmm. He's speaking about the conversation between Vyasa and Narada. And there he says that Vyasa entered Narada through his words and Narada entered Vyasa through his words. And Swami says, when you're conversing with another person, you are entering that person's being through your words. And the other person is entering your being through his words. And Swami said, modern science doesn't recognize it, but each one is entering the other's bodies. Now, with that, you realize how important it is the company that we keep.
Right.
So, in the same way, when I meditate, I am allowing that object to enter me. Now, I may say that badminton is also meditation. I mean, do I want to be a shuttle racket or a court? I mean, no. Is that the quality? That is what I am allowing to enter in me. I think that is the reason why, though concentration can be achieved either on the thumb or on a badminton court or a shuttle badminton shuttle, to reach meditation and enjoy that bliss, the object of meditation is so important. That's why we should choose a name of the Lord, the form of the Lord. And Swami says, the name and form of your liking, which you have conviction. Because possibly for me, if I am told to meditate on Dattatreya, my personal experience is possibly not with Dattatreya. So for me, the form of Swami is most cherished and I have experienced the most and I am convinced the most. So I will choose Swami. Somebody else will choose Dattatreya. Somebody else will choose Jesus. So I just felt that it is so important that the object of meditation is also something that we hold in high reverence, something that we love a lot and something that we look up to emulate. Because what qualities and virtues we give to that object of meditation, that is what is going to enter us also as we meditate on that.
Absolutely. I think even when Swami was talking about Jyoti meditation, Swami made a mention of that. You know, it is not that you are meditating on the flame, but you are meditating on a specific quality. The quality of undiminishing nature, the quality of the ability to be in multiple places. You know, Swami was saying that you think of the flame, it is able to light so many lamps. It's the same flame which is able to multiply into so many places. And the idea of, you know, it's this, the lamp is the same. The flame is the light which is brought in here or outside, it's the same. Mm. So Swami was saying that you are meditating on all of these qualities. And at the same time, you are kind of extending the idea that Swami is present as a flame in me and Swami is present as the light in the other person. So it's always the quality that Swami refers to, and that is why I think it's so rightly, as you said, it is so much better meditating on a specific name and form. And that's why the idea of the concept of the Ishta Devata itself is there.
Mm.
And it doesn't, at that point, you don't think that, you know, is this God powerful enough for me to meditate upon? You kind of, that becomes your Ishta Devata. You're not meditating on a lesser form. You know, you take a form, for you it is the ultimate form. You are meditating on Ganesha, you don't think that, oh, but Ganesha is the son of Shiva. You know, is it okay I meditate? You know, you take a form, for you that is the source of all wisdom and source of all grace that you're looking for.
In fact, I think this is the resolution of a common confusion that one gets while chanting the Vedas. You chant the Ganapati Atharva Shirsham, he is Tvam Sakshat Atmasi Nityam, you are the ultimate. Oh, Ganesha is the ultimate. Then you go to Durga Suktam, oh, Durga is the ultimate. Then you go to Purusha Suktam, then you go to Narayana Suktam. No, who is ultimate, man? No, it's that ultimate is given a name and form of your liking.
Right.
So whichever name and form you give out of your liking, that becomes the ultimate.
Absolutely.
So that is what it is. That is the thing, dear listeners. I think we need to therefore pick our object of meditation very carefully and let it be a name and form that we desire. And as Swami has said, focus, keep the focus on the name. And as it seems to be wavering away from the name, take it to the form. As it wavers from the form, take it to the name. Let the mind oscillate between the name and the form as we concentrate and then move to contemplation, finally to meditation. On that note, dear listeners, we will take a quick little break, because at this point in time, the theme changes, the topic changes, and the meditation part is more or less complete. So we will take a quick little break, and on the other side of the break, resume this conversation.
Tu hi faqir, tu hi hai raja, tu hi hai saai, tu hi hai ba. Sai Nath, Sai Nath, Sai Nath, tere hazaro haath, Sai Nath, tere hazaro haath, jis jisne tera naam liya, jis jisne tera naam liya, tu ho liya uske saath, Sai Nath, Sai Nath, Sai Nath, tere hazaro haath, Sai Nath, tere hazaro haath. देखूं तो सुला के कन्हैया, खुद देखूं तो दुर्गा मैया, इत देखूं तो साईनाथ साईनाथ तेरे हजारों हाथ साईनाथ तेरे हजारों हाथ तेरा दर है दया का सागर सब मजहब भरते हैं गागर तेरा दर है दया का सागर सब मजहब भरते हैं गागर पावन पारस तेरी साईनाथ साईनाथ तेरे हजारों हाथ साईनाथ तेरे हजारों हाथ तेरा मन सबका मदीना जो भी आए सीखे जीना तो चाहे तो चल जाए घात तू ही भोला तू ही नाथ तू ही भोला तू ही नाथ साई नाथ साईनाथ साईनाथ तेरे हजारों हाथ साईनाथ तेरे हजारों हाथ जिस जिसने तेरा नाम लिया जिस जिसने तेरा नाम लिया तो हो लिया उसके साथ
Welcome back, dear listeners. As we said before the break, we will continue with the conversation. And Hislop asks, the other day, Swami, not only were the college boys delighted at the return to Vrindavan, but they were very much surprised. I also was, because Swami had said he would definitely stay at the ashram. So it is very clear that Swami had left Vrindavan saying that I'm going to Prashantinilayam, and then he returned back to Vrindavan very shortly and surprised everybody. And that is what Hislop says, that I also was surprised. And Swami says, Baba made the decision to stay in Prashantinilayam through Shivratri. That was his sankalpa. His will is as iron. On the third day of the festival, the boys at Vrindavan decorated the cows and had a procession. And their longing for Swami was so strong that Swami made a sudden decision to come to Vrindavan. It might be asked, if Swami Sankalpa is as iron, how can that be changed? Well, devotion is as fire. Fire will melt iron. God is moved by devotion. And I think we have also seen this prem happening. In 2005 or 6, that Swami suddenly went for a drive. I'm absolutely not sure of the year, but it's post 2005 only. I have heard this narrated by Padmanabhan sir himself, he was the driver, driving Swami's car. He was sharing how Swami said, we'll go for a drive, we'll be going for a drive. And as I went for a drive, Swami pointed to one direction and said, okay, drive this way, drive this way, drive this way. And he says, we drove and reached Vrindavan. So I asked him, sir, the car was fueled and all that, no? He said, every time car is fueled and kept to the full. Then I said, oh, that means you would not have had miracles of Swami creating fuel out of water. He's saying, no. In my time, the miracle is never the car tank was empty. It was always kept fully fueled because that is my duty. If I don't do my duty, Swami will take me to task. And I thought it makes sense because those days when you have heard of those miracles, they're all devotees' cars and Swami is traveling with them. Here he says, Swami has given me a duty as his driver and I have to do my duty to the full. So he in fact said, I am scared of these water petrol miracles. Car has to have always full tank. But he said that Swami just drove. And so it was not as if like in those days Swami did those leelas. Even as late as past 2005 we have seen this. When there is yearning, that's it. In fact, when we were discussing Swami's visit to Africa, we came to this point where Swami said, I didn't travel to another continent. I just traveled to visit a devotee. That devotee happened to be in Africa, that's all. So it is the call of a devotee that matters. And once the call is there, Swami rushes. And here also, that is what Swami is telling to his love, that they prayed, though mine is Vajrasankal, mine is iron will. Iron melts in the face of fire, and devotion is the fire that melts the iron, which is the Lord's will.
And absolutely. And I think this again is a question that a lot of devotees have in their mind. You know, does really prayer have any effect on destiny? Is, you know, things are fixed already? Does it change anything when you pray? Does it change anything when you yearn? I think Swami's answer is very, very clear. And what Swami is saying is also, I don't know exactly how Swami must have worded this in Telugu or whether he said this in English, but Swami didn't say that the boys wanted me to come, I came. Swami says there was yearning, I came. So probably the boys did not even think that, you know, Swami, we want you here, you have to come or anything like that, or you have to change your plan and you have to come. Swami just says that there was yearning and I came. So I think that is the whole idea of, you know, whether... the response is always to love. It is not about me being able to change the course with my prayer or with my... So Swami doesn't respond to that kind of a thing, but your duty is only to yearn. Don't ask me whether it will change, whether Swami will change his plans, whether destiny is... He said, no, when you're asking, you ask for it. You invest your love and your devotion. And Swami is saying that I will ensure... In my own way, it'll be made to happen.
Such a beautiful point, because I remember reading in the Bhagavata Vahini where Swami says the avatar is a concretization of a devotee's yearning. So
absolutely,
when there is yearning, there's all automatic concretization. And when the avatar is in physical frame, it happened with him appearing there.
Right.
In fact, it reminds me of a reverse case. I think we have discussed this a couple of times, but I will narrate it again. When... there was an occasion when Swami's car was going for a drive in Prashanthi Nilayam, and as is her wont, Sai Geeta comes onto the road. Sai Geeta, Swami's pet elephant, and every time Swami sees, and she used to be the signaling mechanism. Those days when Swami's car would go around, there would be no police escort, no sirens. So Sai Geeta's trumpet would serve as a siren for most of the students in the hostel, which was bang opposite to Sai Geeta's quarters. So all the students hear Sai Geeta and they come out. But on that day, Sai Geeta was behaving a little strange, where she went and placed her trunk on Swami's bonnet, the car bonnet, as if stopping the car from proceeding. Swami gets down from the car and takes out fruits from the dicky, from the rear. Yeah.
Dicky.
That's what we say in India. So from the boot, yes, from the boot, he takes out the fruits and he starts feeding Sai Geeta. But strangely, Sai Geeta is refusing to eat those fruits. She seems upset over something and she's just standing there blocking Swami's car by putting her trunk on the bonnet of the car. It went on for some time. Nobody was able to understand what's happening till Swami said, okay, Geeta, I will not go. I will return. And he walked back, put the fruits back in the trunk of the car. And then Swami said, boys, I was planning to go to Vrindavan. But now Sai Geeta says, no, so I will stay back. Nobody even realized that, you know, Swami was going to go to Vrindavan. So, just like when there is yearning, Swami automatically decides to go to Vrindavan. When there is a yearning, Swami just decides to stay in Prashantanilayam. So, as you rightly said, it's all about yearning, and once that yearning is there, I think, if we ask, oh, if I yearn, then will Swami appear before me over here?
Right.
I think one of the, it's like, you know, when you, if suppose there is, you're told that be selfless. When you're selfless, everything will be fine. So somebody will say, okay, I will be selfless, but if I am selfless, what will I get then? No, I mean, it breaks the very basic fundamental definition of selflessness. If you're truly selfless, you don't care whether you get anything or not. In the same way, when you're genuinely yearning, you are not wanting anything in some manner for it to happen. Just like yearning is a spontaneous outflow of your love for the Lord, grace comes as a spontaneous outflow of the Lord's love for you.
Right, and I think this can be, here Swami is of course speaking about his sankalpa and his sankalpa changing. And whenever Swami speaks about it, here Swami says iron, Swami would say vajra sankalpa.
Diamond.
Swami would say it's as, impregnable as diamond. Many people have this doubt, you know, technically a lot of people ask this, can prayers and can our devotion obliterate our prarabdha, right? Because a lot of people have this idea that it creates good karma in the future, or it kind of can remove sanchita karma, which is like, you know, karma which is there.
Historical backlog.
Right? But whether the prarabdha, when the prarabdha is referred to as destiny for this life, because we have taken this karma to do this.
Finish off this karma,
right,
in this life.
They say that, you know, that cannot be mitigated. The destiny of this life cannot be. Swami makes it very, very clear that there's nothing like that. One of the stories which, you know, my father used to tell me, I'm sure I might have narrated this before, is the story of a man who is meditating under a tree. And the only aim that he's having is he should have the darshan of Lord Vishnu. And one day when he's meditating, he finds sage Narada come by. And he goes and prostrates in front of him and he says, you know, sage Narada, I've been meditating for so many years here. I want to know when I will get darshan of the Lord. So whenever you're going that side, you know, please find out from Lord Vishnu. And sage Narada is very impressed, you know, in Kali Yuga you have a person like this who is so desperate for a vision of the Lord. So he straight away goes to Vaikuntha so that he can ask Lord Vishnu. And he goes there and he finds that Lord Vishnu is in a relaxing mood. So he goes in very eagerly. He says, no, Lord, I came across a devotee like this. He was very, very devoted and so noble. The only desire that he has is he wants to have a darshan of yours. And he's been meditating for so many years. So please, can you tell me when he will get darshan? So Lord Vishnu says, Narada, not now. I'm not in the mood to talk about it. You come to me sometime later. So Narada starts pestering. No, you know, you should tell me. Because in all my roamings, I've never found a person like this. I want to go and tell him. So, as though he was irritated by this pestering of Narada, Lord Vishnu says, go and tell him that it'll take as many years as there are leaves on the tree under which he is sitting and meditating. The next moment, Narada thinks of that tree, and it's a huge tree with a, you know, widespread canopy. It's typically like one of those banyan trees under which people sit and meditate. So he thinks, oh my God, it's going to take so many thousands of years for that person to get his wish fulfilled. So with a crestfallen face, Narada goes there and he tells this person, he said, you know, this is what Lord Vishnu told me. The moment this is conveyed to that devotee breaks into a dance and he starts jumping in ecstasy. And Narada thinks that what is this fellow jumping about, and I've not given him some happy news. And the story goes, the next moment Lord Vishnu actually appears there. And the devotee is very happy, Lord is very happy and grants him the darshan.
Narada is like, you cheater.
Narada is like, you know, what is happening here? You know, in the whole process, my word has lost its value. So he goes to Lord Vishnu and says, how could you do this? You know, I after all conveyed whatever you told me, and how can you appear like this in front of him? So then Lord Vishnu says that that mere joy that that devotee felt, that at some point he will get my darshan. It was so true and it was so overwhelming that I had to come now and break my own word. Right? So it is not that, now you should come and I am praying and you should change your thing and come. It is nothing like that. Just that joy, just that true love, right, in whatever way it expresses. So it is, you know, you could have a backlog of prarabdha. Don't pray to Swami that, Swami, you know, get rid of this prarabdha, or get rid of this destiny. But just that pure love, you know, Swami, I know that you can do anything. I know that if you wish, you can change this. So let it be your wish. Whatever is your wish, I will accept it. So there is nothing that cannot be changed, that nothing, no destiny that cannot be changed by Swami.
You know, the Lord's grace is such that even if there are a million leaves on the tree, it requires one autumn to just remove the leaves.
In fact, there are two versions of the story. One version of the story is there was a gust of wind, all the leaves fell down, and then the Lord appeared. The other version which I narrated, which I felt is the beautiful version, is the Lord saying that the happiness was so true that even if it meant me breaking my word, it doesn't matter. I would come and grant my darshan.
Yes, and also I think we should learn a lot of optimism from that devotee, because he did not say, oh my God, these many leaves. He just said, oh, that means he's going to come then.
He is going to come, right.
He is going to come, that's enough. That is a kind of optimistic joy that was displayed by Shabari. My guru has said he's going to come, and let it be how much ever. So also, if Swami has told, even in a discourse, if Swami is saying that, you yearn for me, I will come. Tappaga nen vastanu. Swami said, tappaga means without fail I'll come. That's it. It is as good or as terrific as a promise that has been given to that devotee or to Shabari. Why are we not rejoicing in that joyous anticipation? Why do we lead lives as if the whole world around us has crumbled? So I think it again boils down to our own faith, our own yearning. Yearning is the key there. And whether it is karma yoga, bhakti yoga, or jnana yoga, I think all of them, that yearning, that intense yearning is what makes all the difference when we need to progress.
Right. And Hislop asked the next question. He says, Swami, people are making conflicting statements about the use of vibhuti. Should a devotee of Swami use vibhuti as the only treatment for sickness and injury?
Very nice question.
Very important question. I'm sure it's there in the minds of a lot of people. Swami's answer also is a bit tricky. You know, Swami gives scope for both kinds of understanding, but at the same time, Swami gives enough scope for devotees with enough faith also. So maybe we'll just read out this conversation and let's see what we can, what we kind of draw from this answer that Swami gives. So the first thing that Swami says is, do not give any importance to minor sickness and injury. In more serious matters, it is better that prayer be made to Swami. This is important. Vibhuti may or may not be used, but there should be prayer.
It is best that prayer is made.
Swami. Right. Swami says there should be prayer. Then Hislop goes on to ask, how about the help that is ordinarily available? Probably he's referring to medical help. Should a person try that first before calling to Swami? Swami replies, some people have faith in doctors and some have faith in Swami. Hislop persists. He says, but Swami, that is exactly the problem. People are afraid that if they do anything except use vibhuti, they are demonstrating lack of faith in Swami. Very, very beautifully worded. Then Swami says, actually, both can proceed together. The doctors can be consulted and vibhuti can also be used. But regardless of the degree of faith, it is best to pray to Swami for his grace. Then Hislop again asks, some devotees go to the extreme. No matter how serious the disease or trouble, they declare they will use vibhuti only and will never go to a doctor. Then Swami says, if they wish to do that, they may. Swami's preference would be that ordinary means of help be given their due place. So as I said, a very, very interesting conversation, very useful for the present times or for any time, because we all keep falling sick, we all keep getting into this dilemma whether I should go to a doctor, use traditional medicine, or should I depend completely on Swami.
I think the contradiction comes when there is the fear there, you know. If I am using vibhuti out of fear or not using vibhuti out of fear, like, hey, if I take some medicine, it means that I don't have faith in vibhuti. So for that sake, I am not taking. I think it's not about managing perception. This is not a perception management exercise. This is about what we genuinely feel and believe. If there is faith that vibhuti is enough, it will work that way. In fact, I have seen this happening, you know, where a person possibly doesn't have faith in vibhuti and that's why he doesn't consider it seriously. But even to such a person, for example, I'm just giving as an example. If I don't have faith in vibhuti, then if I take vibhuti, it is not working for me. But you have faith in vibhuti, and when I am sick, you come and give me the vibhuti, and I am healed. I have seen such experiences also happening. So it is the faith that matters. When we read about the experience of the doctor, was it Dorai Swami? He kept a photograph of Swami holding the lingam.
Mm-hmm.
On the body of a dead child, and the child came back to life.
Okay.
Now, is it the power of that photograph or is it the power of the faith of that person? And that is the reason why, you know, there's one photograph of Swami holding up the lingam with a red background. I think it was during a summer. It's not a Shivratri Lingodbhavam, but Swami is holding up a black lingam. And that photograph is sold very widely as the healing photograph. Now, any photograph can be a healing photograph because it depends on the faith. And that is what Swami is saying over here, that if you take vibhuti only, not because of faith in vibhuti, but because taking anything else will show that you don't have faith in vibhuti, out of that fear, it doesn't work. Because fear should definitely not be there in anything concerned with God. It should only be love. There are only two emotions in the universe, love and fear. Where there is love, there is no fear. Where there is fear, there is no love. And that's why to clear all this confusion, Swami says, the preference is give the due to ordinary means that is there, which is medical help, what the doctor is telling, yes. But 100% pray to Swami for grace. Pray to Swami for grace and take vibhuti. You know, I was just thinking, imagine you're driving your car, because Swami often compares the human body to a car. You're driving your car and going to a place and the car undergoes a breakdown. And you're worried what to do. Not a car, take a little bigger vehicle. So 5, 6, 10 of you are in the vehicle. The van breaks down, you're wondering what to do. You say, no, Swami will take care. Just take little vibhuti and sprinkle on the engine. Now, in the meanwhile, one other person goes actually, scouts out for a mechanic, gets the mechanic, and the mechanic comes and repairs the vehicle. Now, the person who came up with the vibhuti idea will be convinced that, now because I put the vibhuti, no, all this happened. But the mechanic made it fine. The person who put the vibhuti will say, who was that mechanic? That mechanic came, that is Swami's grace. Now, so it's totally, if the person who called the mechanic feels that, no, I put effort and called the mechanic, it's because of my effort. So, what is right, what is wrong over here? Now imagine another scenario, just to complicate it. If that mechanic comes and tries, but the vehicle is not repaired, then what now? Your vibhuti did not work. Your mechanic calling effort did not work. So it gets too complicated. But finally, what it boils down to is your faith and what is the feeling within. Is it a feeling of love or is it a feeling of fear? There should be no fear. Therefore, do anything that is necessary to banish the fear. If that fear goes away by taking a paracetamol tablet given by a doctor, no harm, take it. If that fear goes away by applying vibhuti, every time, you know, before coming to studio or going to buy groceries or doing anything in this corona situation, every time I take a pinch of vibhuti, it is making me fearless and making me feel good. So I will take that. I think that is what Swami is practically saying. And that's why he concludes by saying that Swami's preference would be that ordinary means of help be given their due place. Don't condemn it as useless. Don't say it is wrong. It has to be given its place. And I think that is the reason why Swami has himself started a general hospital and a super speciality hospital.
Very true. I think most times what happens is, as you're saying, that fear is one of the best indicators that probably can be looked at in situations such as this. Let's say that I take traditional medicine. You know, I'm having some problem. I'm taking a traditional medicine. And the doctor clearly tells me that, you know, this will take about 24 hours to start working. You know, you'll see the effect only after 24 hours. Which means for 24 hours, I will accept that present pain that I'm having or the suffering that I'm undergoing.
Mm.
Right? So which means even when I'm taking a medicine, there is a certain amount of acceptance of the present pain or the relief coming later, or if there are some other complications which will be part of the thing, like suppose you have a fracture, the doctor is going to tell you have to take 3 months bed rest, right? So I'm accepting that 3 months of bed rest as a part of the medication. So I feel in the same way, like suppose I'm not well and I'm telling that, you know, I'm completely dependent on Swami, which means to a certain extent there should be an acceptance of pain, which I feel is not there. The moment you say that, you know, Swami will take care, and if I am restless, I mean, I took vibhuti, I said, Swami, I'm dependent on you, I'm still suffering like that, which means you are not accepting Swami's timing or timeline of the cure, right? Just like how, you know, you could go to a doctor and still be miserable.
You know, when you said this, I'm just thinking, imagine doctor gives you a pill and tells you, after 2 days, you will find relief. Which means I'm fine with suffering for 2 days.
Exactly.
But on the day two, if that pain is not gone, that's it. I go, doctor, what is it? Nothing is happening. It's useless medicine. This. The problem is with God, that 2 days we think of it as 2 minutes. Swami, you take care. I took vibhuti. What, Swami? Nothing is happening. Come on, man. Give. Because like you said, the fracture example, I have experienced it where the doctor said it's not a fracture, but it's a very sensitive tendon or something that has got injured. So I advise that you don't play for 3 months. You know, it's been, I told you about my love for badminton. It's been 6 months since I've played because 3 months that damn tendon. And then this 3 months is corona. You know, it's like, so, but I was fine. I mean, for 3 months not playing is fine. But if I had not gone to the doctor and said, Swami, you take care. Within 3 days, I'll like, Swami, what is this? The pain is still there. I'm not. I think that is what it is. We expect Swami to work instantaneously always because he has done it at times. We think that that is how it is. And that is where the difference comes.
Exactly. So there is a certain amount of acceptance which comes. You know, there are devotees, right? Because the reason why I was saying that there is a little bit of ambiguity that Swami is leaving is, you know, when he says that there are some devotees who go to the extreme. Swami says if they wish to do that, they may.
They may,
right?
Yes.
Which means Swami is saying that there are people who are doing that and I am okay with it. Swami is saying that my preference, when Swami says my preference, that probably is, you know, like the general advice, whatever Swami says in a discourse. It's because if Swami has never said in a discourse, you don't need to take medicine at all. Mm. As you said, same Swami has started a general hospital, a super specialty hospital, which means that is the general advice, that there are means by which you can set right problems in the body, and, you know, and there is a certain way in which that medicine has to be practiced, and as an ideal for that, Swami has set up a hospital. Swami would never say that I suggest all devotees should never take medication if they were unwell. But if you feel that, you know, that is the kind of devotion I must practice, then I think it is like you are surrendering to Swami, and surrender, as Swami has clearly said, is accepting pain and pleasure as one. Which means at that moment, that pain, you accept it as Swami's prasadam. The next moment, if Swami chooses that you have to be given relief, you accept that also. So it comes with, if you want to have that kind of an extreme surrender to Swami, or at least you're trying to practice that, this is the way to practice it. You accept the pain in that moment. There's no point in saying, no, I will not go to the doctor because Swami is my doctor, and then you keep whining all day long. I think that makes no sense.
Absolutely. In fact, to just add on to that, when you say that I've surrendered to Swami and you say that you accepted pain, I think you should also keep in mind that that pain may never go. When you say that Swami knows what is best for me, and you say this fracture, I'll not go to the doctor. If it is best for you that for 80 years you remain like that with a broken leg, that's what it is. You should be able to accept it. And we have Swami as a living proof. I mean, to show that's what he did. He accepted it and never complained about it. But I'm saying this because, you know, there was a person who wanted advice because there was one problem that was just not going away from his or her life. And I told the person that genuinely, if you want to be freed from the fear and worry of that, offer it to Swami. And tell Swami, you know what is best, you do. That person comes back to me after 2 months and says, no, 2 months it's been on Swami's desk, he has not done anything. Which means you're still holding on to that and you want one kind of conclusion. You're attached to one way that the... So it is not as if, now I've surrendered to Swami and my leg will heal. No, your leg may not heal also. Your leg means just like I'm able to accept that my leg miraculously heals in 10 hours. We share it. We say, you know, And that which the doctor said that it is never going to happen, within a matter of 1 week, it was totally gone. That is okay. Then if it doesn't go also, that also should be okay. That is what is surrender. So just wanted to add that it's not only about being ready to wait for a long time, but being ready that it will never happen in the way I want.
And that's why I think what Swami is suggesting, you know, initially when Hislop asked about Vibhuti, what Swami is suggesting is probably the best middle average path. I'm saying whether you use Vibhuti or not, you have faith, you use Vibhuti. If you have faith in a doctor, go to a doctor. But whatever be the thing, don't worry about your level of faith and all that. Pray to Swami. I think that's a very subtle way in which it works in the mind. As you said, you know, I go to a doctor, I take the medicine or I take the course of medication or the treatment the doctor gives. But I'm also praying. At the end of the day, I will have gratitude to the doctor, but I will also have gratitude to Swami. I'll say, you know, I prayed to Swami and it happened. Swami would say this, I don't know, in one of the discourse Swami says, you know, when you're, let's say you're putting a lot of effort in trying to get something done and you also pray, you don't know how much the prayer has worked and how much your effort has worked, right? Actually, it leads to doership coming down.
You know, your ego coming
right
down.
When you've written an exam, you know, you've done the hard work of whatever, sincerely, what is the duty as a student you're supposed to do, you've put in. And you've also prayed before you go to the exam and then you've given the exam. You will not be filled with that feeling that, you know, I worked hard and, you know, this is the result of my effort. Somewhere, at least as a doubt, that feeling will be there. Swami has also helped me achieve this. And I think that's what prayer does. So I don't think any of us can claim that we are in that extreme end of faith, that we are completely dependent. So that is what prayer helps, because you kind of put a little bit of uncertainty through prayer, you know, quote unquote uncertainty. You kind of bring in God in whatever happens in your life in that manner. You get cured, you're saying that Swami has cured me. You don't get cured, to a certain extent you'll have that feeling that maybe this is good for me. You know, I prayed, I did whatever had to be done, still this problem persists. Maybe there's a reason for that.
In a sense, you know, this is like a vaccination. When you do a vaccination, you are actually injecting your body with that same harmful thing, so that when you really face that harmful thing, you are well protected against it. With this kind of attitude, praying, I think it makes us less body conscious, and the next time we come across a similar difficulty or pain, we won't suffer as much. Pain will be there, but suffering won't be there. This is a thing that Swami had told Professor Anil Kumar. When he said, Swami, it must be so painful sitting like this with a broken hip. Swami said, yes, pain is there, but I am not suffering. So, you know, that statement is so beautiful because it opened my eyes to the fact that there are two separate things. We often think pain and suffering are synonymous. No, no, no. Pain and suffering are different. Pain is possibly what is destined, and suffering is possibly my choice. So, that becomes very clear, and if I am able to surrender to Swami, the suffering reduces. And that's what Swami says also. Your God's grace is like that painkiller injection. That pain is not gone, but your perception of the pain will go, which is suffering.
Right. And I think what is also important is, you know, Swami would say that when you take Vibhuti, or when you say that, you know, I'm dependent on Swami, don't... You know, action is one thing. Action is, I mean, you still have faith in the doctor, so you still feel, I mean, I've seen a lot of devotees like that. They're very devoted to Swami, pray every day, but they know that medicine has a value, right? That's a different concept for them. It's just like food has a value. You know, none of us say that Swami will sustain me, because we know that when I'm hungry, I eat food, which we have accepted as a norm of living, right? So a lot of people have accepted medicine as a norm of living. You know, something goes wrong, it's just like how something goes wrong with your car, you take it to a mechanic. Something goes wrong with the physical body, you take it to a doctor. That has got nothing to do with the faith that you have on Swami. But at the same time, Swami would say that when you say that I have faith in Swami, you think deeply about it. When I say I'm dependent on Swami, how can it reflect in my actions? You know, you don't have to wake up one day and say that I won't go to a doctor, I don't take any medicine. But contemplate on that idea. When I say that I'm dependent on Swami, how is it reflecting in the actions that I'm doing? I think there's a very beautiful episode that was narrated by Dr. Sainath, one of our lecturers. In one of his talks, he was mentioning this. There was this person, Mr. Vacha, right? He used to be a staff in a shopping complex. And he had this fracture or something. And he went to a doctor. The doctor put a cast. I don't know exactly what is the problem, whether it's a leg or any other problem. And the doctor said that, you know, you'll have to be in cast for so many months, something like that. He comes back to Parthi and Swami comes to him in the darshan line, and Swami says, what are the doctor saying and all that. And this person says, Swami, I've gone to the doctor. This is what the doctor said. But Swami, you are my doctor. You should only take care of me. So Swami says, Manchadi, and blesses him. The next day again, Swami comes and asks him, so what are the doctors saying? He says, Swami, the doctor said that I should be in the cast with so many weeks. Swami says, okay. Again, Swami comes the third day and Swami asks, what are the doctors saying? So Swami keeps asking this every time in darshan, and he's wondering, like, why is Swami repeating this? What am I missing? Because Swami will do this only because he wants to drive a lesson and you're not able to get it. So he goes back home one day, he's thinking about this and he tells his wife, you know, I don't know why Swami is asking. I told him clearly, and Swami would have spoken to the doctors also, you know, knowing Swami, how he cares for people in the ashram. So I don't know why Swami is constantly repeatedly asking me the same thing. Then his wife asked him, what did you tell Swami when you went and reported the first time? So he said, I told him what the doctor said. What else did you say? He said, Swami, you are my doctor. You have to take care of me. Then she said, see, that is the whole thing. You tell Swami that you are my doctor, but when Swami comes and asks you what are the doctors saying, you are telling what the doctors are saying.
Mm.
Right? So he said, tomorrow when Swami comes and asks you, you tell Swami, Swami, you are the doctor. So whenever you say, it'll be fine. And that's exactly what happened the next day. Again, Swami came and asked him. And Swami said, ah. So then Swami said, okay, in another 1 week, you can remove the cast. Right? So I think that is also important. When you say that I have faith in Swami, you should also ruminate over, you know, what does it really mean? What do I really mean by saying this? Are my actions in line with what I'm saying?
Mm.
Right? But it is not for the display, right? There are a lot of people who say this. I don't know who had this experience. I had heard this in another talk where a devotee who's a very senior devotee, I think he was head of a center or something like that. He's been coming to Swami and he's a very inspirational figure. He gives a lot of talks, gives a lot of motivation to youngsters. And finally, there's a disaster in his own family. Right? I think his wife dies or something. He's very attached to his wife. And he's in a fix. Can I cry now? Because all the Sai devotees are around.
Hmm.
You know, can I cry? And he's actually holding back. And literally, he hears Swami's voice within, kind of commanding him, shut up and cry. You know, literally, Swami commanding. Because sometimes we get into that, you know, we imprison ourselves in the image that we create around ourselves.
Exactly. It is equal to saying, I am not going to take medicine because it will show my lack
right.
of faith
if
in vibhuti.
If I go to a doctor, what will the, you know, my...
what, it look like I don't have faith in vibhuti.
Right.
What will Swami think?
Right.
So that
what
is what...
Swami think at least is okay. You know, what will the other devotees who come to the center and Samiti think of me?
Exactly.
That's more dangerous, I think.
So, in as we said, these are things that are driven by fear versus love, and with Swami, it's always driven by love. Again, after this, the theme changes. The time shows that our afternoon satsang segment is over. So on that note, dear listeners, we will leave you. As always, you can write to us at listener@radiosai.org with your feedback, comments and thoughts. We will go through them and try to incorporate them in our future satsangs as much as possible. So we will leave you with a song, on the other side of which you will be greeted by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.
Sarve jana sukhino bhavantu, loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. Sarve jana sukhino bhavantu, loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. Sarve jana sukhino bhavantu, loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. Jagatiloni janulandaru anandamu nundali.
మార్గమున నడచి సర్వోన్నతి నొందాలి. జగతిలోని జనులందరూ ఆనందము నొందాలి, ప్రగతి మార్గమున నడచి సర్వోన్నతి నొందాలి.
సర్వే జనా సుఖినో భవంతు, లోకా సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు. సర్వే జనా సుఖినో భవంతు, లోకా సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు. సర్వే జనా సుఖినో భవంతు, లోకా సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు. పంచను చేరి మంచితనము నేర్చుకొని మాయా మర్మముల వీడి వంచనముల విడనాడి. సాయి పంచను చేరి మంచితనము నేర్చుకొని మాయా మర్మముల వీడి వంచనముల విడనాడి. సర్వం కల్విదం అంటూ సాయి సంఘులై ఎల్లరూ కల్విదం అంటూ సాయి సంఘులై ఎల్లరూ సద్గుణముల నందాలి, సద్గతులను పొందాలి. సద్గుణముల నందాలి, సద్గతులను పొందాలి. సర్వే జనా సుఖినో భవంతు, లోకా సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు. సర్వే జనా సుఖినో భవంతు, లోకా సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు.
జీవకోటికాధారం ప్రాణవాయువైనట్లు, ప్రాణవాయువుకు మూలం చైతన్యం అయినట్లు. జీవకోటికాధారం ప్రాణవాయువైనట్లు, ప్రాణవాయువుకు మూలం చైతన్యం అయినట్లు. ఉచ్ఛ్వాస నిశ్వాసముల చైతన్యం ఈతడే, ఉచ్ఛ్వాస నిశ్వాసముల చైతన్యం ఇతడేనని విశ్వాసమంది సాయి చరణారవిందముల, విశ్వాసమంది సాయి చరణారవిందముల. జగతిలోని జనులందరూ ఆనందము నొందాలి, ప్రగతి మార్గమున నడచి సర్వోన్నతి నొందాలి. జగతిలోని జనులందరూ ఆనందము నొందాలి, ప్రగతి మార్గమున నడచి సర్వోన్నతి నొందాలి.
సర్వే జనా సుఖినో భవంతు, లోకా సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు. సర్వే జనా సుఖినో భవంతు, లోకా సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు. సర్వే జనా సుఖినో భవంతు, లోకా సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు. సర్వే జనా